Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects. And if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio. 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app, which you could download anywhere you get your apps. Your Google Play Store, your Apple App Store, download that Odyssey app. Search for WILK News Radio, favorite it, and that's it. That's all you need to do. It works seamlessly with your CarPlay. You don't have to worry about AM, FM signal. You get us anywhere in the nation, anywhere in the world, actually. Podcast. You can get us anywhere you get your favorite podcast. Just search The Rob O'Donnell Show. We are on every podcast platform, Spotify, Apple Podcast, anywhere you get it. And those smart speakers, which is unbelievably the number one way people listen to us here at WILK News Radio. You can get us at, and ask those little suckers, you know who I'm talking about. If I say them, people get mad because I set them off in your house. Just ask those smart speakers to play WILK News Radio, and it will live right then and there. How's everyone doing on this Wednesday, January? Is today Wednesday? Today's Thursday. I see I didn't change those things. Today's Thursday. So much happening. Let me write that down so I remember, because I'll just say Wednesday again. It is Thursday, January 8th, 2026. It's been a busy 24 hours. And listen, I am optimistically surprised and thankful that for the most part, there was a peaceful evening. That's a good thing. That's a good start. But mind you, that the agitators and those who are paid to divide us are mobilizing and initiating their infrastructure. And make no mistake, there is a infrastructure there. But the protests that we have seen, you know, there were little things here and there. But for the most part, you know, there was a protest in New York City in Foley Square where they had to call a level one mobilization. But it was, for the most part, peaceful. And other areas, you know, there were some minor things going on, but not like we've seen. And that's all a good thing. That's all for the best. And hopefully it remains that way. I did see Tim Walz. His press conference earlier, actually it was probably about 1 o'clock today, and it was interesting because they're talking about the Bureau of Criminal Investigations from Minnesota, who is tasked locally in the state with investigating use of force incidents. They are not investigating this. The federal government has not granted them access, and the FBI is handling this investigation, not Department of Homeland Security, but the FBI. So Tim Walz made a point as he, and listen, he's been more restrained from the other politicians, senators and congressmen in Washington that are from Minneapolis or Minnesota or even not, and the mayor. Mayor Fry has been stoking the rhetoric. Tim Walz has been more of a passively aggressively, hey, let's peacefully protest, but it's your right to protest and you should get out there and protest. It was a passive aggressive, yes, you know, let's start riling up the protest, but not going as far as and pulling back and drawing that line where violence is concerned, which is good. But you when you listen to him, it's passive aggressive. You know, why aren't you guys out there doing something type thing? But I'm not telling you to do anything violent. But here was his stance. Per the Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, he wants to let the state and local professionals handle this investigation. Well, if you look at the state and local professionals, you have the mayor, Mayor Fry, who says, ICE, get the F out of our city. And he didn't say F. And then you have Tim Walz calling ICE as the Gestapo. So those are the state and local professionals that he wants to investigate this crime, or at least they answer to them. So listen, it's not uncommon for federal incidents, including federal officers, are handled by federal agencies. The FBI is taking the lead here. They had the head of their public safety for the state give statements, and basically they had no processing of the crime scene, so they can't come to any conclusion anyway. So we'll see where this goes. And again, listen, I'm not here to change everybody's mind. There's enough stuff out there. There's more to come from what I'm told. Unfortunately, DHS does not wear body cameras. It's something that I've advocated for a long time. It's something I've talked to people in the highest level of the Department of Homeland Security and Immigration, saying that, you know, I'm a big proponent. I've always have been of body cameras. I think it helps them. I think in this case it would help them, especially with everything else going on. Now, while this happens, you know, there was one of our local news agencies said, you know, there's been 5 shootings of people in vehicles by ICE so far this year. Well, yeah, that may be the case. And I'm not saying that, I'm not disputing their number. What I am disputing is they leave out the fact that there's been an increase of 1,300% of protesters ramming their vehicles into ICE and immigration operations, a 1,300% increase this year. So something like that happened yesterday, because that's been left unaddressed, is unfortunately inevitable that something like that's going to happen. And we did see it happen now. Something to take into account. A little closer to home here, this week, earlier in the week, there were incidents in Scranton. One was an attempted abduction near a Scranton intermediate school, and with a stolen vehicle, and the stolen vehicle was found, and then they had images of someone that they were looking for, a person of interest. Then they ended up arresting that person. Well, it came out in a press release from the Scranton Police Department, who's done phenomenal work, by the way. The Scranton Police Department, in these instances, we're going to talk about them in a wider, broader scale. They have literally done phenomenal work when it comes to this and keeping the public involved and updated and letting us know what's going on. Because when you start talking about abductions, especially in front of an intermediate school and another child that was snatched up on the street while riding his skateboard, it came over as an initial abduction and it turned out to be a gang assault. They arrested them. We talked about it yesterday. 4 individuals, all juveniles. Well, this attempted abduction from the Scranton Intermediate School was also a 14-year-old. Juvenile's family had just moved here from Ohio, where the youth had a history of stealing cars and recruiting others to join him. He's charged with theft of a motor vehicle, receiving stolen property, fleeing and eluding, and prowling at night. Now, I understand the family's been very cooperative with this. Following the abduction attempt, the department, Scranton, ramped up security at all district buildings. Police identified the Hyundai Elantra that was stolen, found it, and through video surveillance of a suspect, a person of interest, they were able to track down. When police approached the 14-year-old, he attempted to flee but was soon apprehended. The juvenile initially refused to provide identifying information, but they were able to determine his identity. The Scranton Police's Department Major Crimes Unit interviewed family members who have been cooperative with officers. Police recovered the clothing worn by the suspect and caught on surveillance video, which is great evidence to have when this comes time for juvenile court. Investigators learned the family recently moved here from Dayton, Ohio, and the suspect had a history of motor vehicle thefts. Officers said the youth was attempting to recruit other juveniles to steal cars, as he had done in Ohio. Police didn't name the juvenile. He was not enrolled in school at the time of the incident. He's being held in a security facility in Northampton Township. And then you add this to the incident of another juvenile that was approached by 4 males. Again, it originally came over as an abduction or attempted abduction. And turned out to be an assault with an edged weapon, we believe a knife or some sort of blade, because there is a charge of a deadly weapon, over an online incident playing a video game. They tracked down this juvenile, snatched him up. There was an assault that took place, and they were also apprehended. So we now have 2 incidents producing 5 arrests where juveniles in Scranton have attempted to abduct someone to recruit them into an auto theft ring and a group assault on another juvenile over an online gaming. Where is the mayor of Scranton, Paige Cognetti, and Lackawanna County's dog and pony show Social Contract LLC that was paid over $100,000 of taxpayer money, ARPA funds, to address such back in October of 2024? Now, their contract ends September of this year, and yet nothing has been done. As of January 8th, 2026, today, I searched all public records. There have been no major public updates, announcements, progress reports, or implementation milestones released since the mid-2025 regarding the City of Scranton and Lackawanna County's partnership with Social Contract LLC, a Delaware community violence intervention and prevention program. Again, taxpayers paid $105,262.84 with Social Contract LLC, again, a Delaware-based firm. It was awarded in October of 2024 with cost sharing equally between the city and the county funded by ARPA allocations. Kickoff events and initial stakeholder meetings started around December of 2024, early 2025. The most public recent reference to activity appears in a city's July 2025 ARPA memo to the Scranton City Council, which noted that the first meeting had begun for the program, with Social Contract confirmed as a vendor. The contract period runs, again, through September 30th of 2026, with options for mutual extension beyond that date. So is this one of those things where, you know, they take the full time to come up with a plan, and then at the end, when the money's all gone, say, oh, we have our plan now, and if you want us to implement it, well, you got to pay us some more money. So what this means, the program's allegedly in the active phase, and that discovery and design stages per early descriptions, focused on co-development and evidence-based strategy tailored to Scranton's needs, including violence interruption, youth diversion, gang prevention, sustainable governance, and funding structures. However, no new press releases, council updates, media coverage, or reports from late 2025 or early 2026 have surfaced on this. The City of Scranton official website, scrantonpa.gov, and recent ARPA-related documents, November 2025 memo, do not mention new developments in this specific area. Social Contract LLC's own site highlights the Scranton partnership but provides no recent updates or case study progress. Well, I think we have a pretty active stage here on the ground in Scranton. It's evident that this money could have been better spent on direct resources to area police departments that could have made a real on-the-ground impact. And again, here's funneling money to out-of-state dog and pony shows to say, look, we're doing something, we're reinventing the wheel when it comes to crime instead of just supporting our great law enforcement here in the city of Scranton and Lackawanna County. And it's obvious that if that money a year and a half ago would have been spent directly here to the police department, to the agencies, to the district attorney's office, it could have made a difference. But, no, let's play progressive wish games and so we can check that box off on our resume as we wave goodbye to Scranton. Just makes you shake your head, because this past week, when it comes to juvenile crime and abductions and car theft rings and people recruiting other juveniles for car theft rings, just a mere fact that a 14-year-old from Dayton, Ohio moved here with his family, wasn't registered to school. Listen, okay, let's take that $100,000 and increase for a 2-year period or a 3-year period. Let's increase the school resource officers with a crime preventionist who is in addition to the school resource officers, showing school students, juveniles across the city, what an omnipresence is when it comes that we're watching this. We have additional resources. If you commit crimes here, we are going to find you. And hopefully Scranton's school resource officers are doing just that now, highlighting these juvenile arrests to people in the schools that they cover. Hey, kids, you know, if you ever think about running down that road or making a poor mistake or a poor life choice, look at our record here in Scranton. We're going to catch you. And you're going to have consequences, and it's going to ruin your life, and this is what it does. But the more people telling them that, the more people in uniform they see, the more people out there that are addressing this sort of thing, and again, the Scranton Police Department has done a phenomenal job here. Could more of a job, could $100,000 a year and a half ago give them the resources to prevent what happened today? We'll never know that. and there's no way to tell that. But I can tell you what didn't help what we saw on the ground this week. Giving $100,000 to a Delaware company that has a track record of pretty much nothing. And that's my two cents on that in over three decades of public safety.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Well, I started getting some messages, tags on Facebook and internet messages, messenger messages from people asking about a procedural vote that took place last night. And basically, it was the House taking steps towards extending the Affordable Care Act subsidies. Actually, it was the procedural vote to allow that to happen. And I believe 9 Republicans crossed over to vote for this. It was 221 to 205. And that was a key test vote before the passage of the bill. We'll expect these enhanced premium tax credits for the Affordable Care Act that expired at the end of the year. There's discussion on how do we extend it for some? How do we redress the issues so everyone doesn't get affected for it? Now, anyone who qualified under the original premium tax credits under the Affordable Care Act was not affected. But because of COVID, they extended it to no income caps. And there was a lot of middle income people, especially here in Pennsylvania, that that benefited from the enhanced premium tax credits. I've been very critical of this because I don't think someone making $200,000 a year, a family, should have taxpayers help supplement their healthcare insurance premiums. But there is middle ground there to where maybe we raise it from, I think it's at $60,000 now under the original Affordable Care Act. You know, maybe we raise that to $80,000, or maybe we raise that to $100,000. Instead of no cap, to where I believe you can make up to $191,000 as a couple and still get some sort of tax benefit where you have.
Hey, friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects, and if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.
The taxpayer help fund your healthcare premiums, your healthcare costs. I do think it needs to be revamped, and this allows that. And the problem is that the House does not allow amendments to this. It's either pass or fail when it comes to this. The Senate, although, does. So these representatives, Rob Bresnahan being one of them, and hopefully have him coming on later in the show to discuss why he voted as he did. But there were 3 Republican representatives, McKenzie, Bresnahan, and another one, Mike Lawler from New York. There were 9 altogether, I believe, 3 of them being from Pennsylvania. And they said, listen, this hurts a large portion of my constituents, and I want to make sure they're protected to the best way they can be. And the best way to do that is get this out of the House and into the Senate, where Senate Republicans have agreed to add amendments, because they can, to help modify this enhanced premium tax credit to where it's not the free-for-all that it was because of COVID. It's more restrained, it's more targeted, but it does not just kick everybody that was in the enhanced tax credit pool out. Now, what that means and what it does, well, here it goes. If Senate Democrats don't want to go along with some Republicans and find a bipartisan solution that's agreeable by all, then it gets voted down and it goes nowhere. So it's opening the door, from what my understanding of this is, to have debates and amendment to modify, but not just end, the enhanced premium tax credits. Now, I've been very critical of the enhanced premium tax credits, but I've also said I agree with bipartisan efforts to find common ground there. Not how it was written under ARPA and the Inflation Reduction Act, again, which has no income caps, and was pretty much open to anyone that does not have an employer-based plan. A large portion of the people who benefited from that are people who retired early. Obviously, they have good enough funds to retire early,
and they're waiting out collecting Social Security so they don't have, so they could get more Social Security. Well, that's not what that was for. So as long as there's these bipartisan talks between Senate Republicans and House Republicans to guide what happens in the Senate, and if they don't, then it just gets, it doesn't make 60 votes in the Senate, and it dies. So the conversation is good, but we will hear hopefully from Rob Bresnahan. He's going to be on the floor of the House, but he was going to try and make time. I was talking to his press secretary. They're going to try and make time to come and talk directly to you on why he did what he did, because I don't want to speak for him. And again, I was critical. I'm not a fan of the enhanced premium tax credits, but I do think they need a new version of the enhanced premium tax credits. And this does open the door for that. So I guess we'll see. And before we go to break, I do also have State Representative Brenda Poe coming in at 4 o'clock today to talk about a new program, a new initiative that she's spearheading in the House here in Pennsylvania. So she's coming in. I believe she'll be in studio at 4 o'clock today. So stay tuned for that as well. It is 3:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. We have a few things to talk about in the economy today that are really, really good. This being one of them, making way for Wawa's in our area. Demolition in the Dixon City prepares the property for a store. I believe there's already plans to put one in Carbondale up right next to the Sheets, where I commonly go to get gas. And that's all a great thing. Listen, I'm a big fan of Sheets. I'm a big fan of Wawa. And I think competition is good. I think competition close to each other is good. So the fact that there will be a Sheets on Main Avenue in Dixon City and another one up on Business Route 6, just above the Viewmont Mall, I think is great for the people here. I think it's great for employees. I think it's great for the price of gas. Competition is good. It's the way our system is set up. Especially over by me, we're in Carbondale, right across the street from each other on the ramp to get up on the Casey Highway. You will have two right next to each other, two choices. They are going to have to compete for gas prices. They're going to have to compete for employee salaries. They're going to have to compete for business. And that's good for us, the consumer. It's good for workers, because if somebody, one of them thinks they're going to shortchange workers, well, the other one's going to pick up the slack and say, hey, we need good workers here. This is what we're paying. So again, it keeps rates up for pay. It keeps gas prices down, although they're kind of out of a lot of control. But for the most part, we've seen how gas prices fluctuate from place to place. With two right next to each other, well, they got to kind of stay the same or close to the same, or offer something that the other one's not offering. A lot of times that's reward points or extra cents off if you're a rewards member or whatever that may be. Better service, more bells and whistles in there to attract you to where you feel more comfortable going there. I mean, I like the Sheets by me. They have two air pumps. They have many gas pumps. Their food there is great. Their store is always well stocked. And if Wawa matches that, well then, hey, it's wherever I get into first, wherever I pull into first, but I'll be sure to check each out as long as they're within the same realm. And when I'm in these places, I often talk to the employees, see how things are going, how happy they're at their job. What do they do? Is this their full-time job? Are they going to school? Are they working? Because I'm interested in that stuff. How are you doing here? Like I said, the Sheets near where I get gas, they've had employment signs up constantly since I've been there. It's a high turnover environment. A lot of times people don't want to work. And when that happens, the prices go up. I've seen the prices go up and down for hourly wages. And that's going to continue. But with two of these places right next to each other, with two of these places in the area, they're going to, no doubt, have to compete for business, have to compete for employees, and they're going to have to compete for customers that come in and want a decent gas price and want decent amenities as far as bathrooms, food, or anything else. Listen, I know people who pick these places just because of the bathrooms they have, if they're nice, clean bathrooms, especially if they're on the go all the time and they need a place like that. If you're just leaving from home and you just use your own personal bathroom, it's not a big deal. If you're going to work and you have a good bathroom there, it's not a big deal. But if you're on the road constantly, if you're driving around, especially, anyone who works on the road, like law enforcement, first responders, our delivery drivers, you name it. They're salespeople. They're out there on the road all the time. they know the places with the best bathrooms. So that's always a good key point to attract people from stopping in. Because, hey, when they're going to go to the bathroom, do they grab a cup of coffee? Do they grab something to drink? Do they grab a bag of chips? Do they get a sandwich? What do they do? Do they play, you know, the lotto? Whatever it is they do. Do they get gas? Yeah, they do. So I'm all happy about these here. And I think the more businesses that come in, especially that compete with one another, it's a win-win for us, the consumer. It's a win-win for employees, and it's a win-win for the communities they serve. It is 3:41 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I'm looking at our Senator Dave McCormick on Fox News right now, talking about Venezuela and oil sales and oil possession. Venezuela is the number one possessor of crude oil in the world. Talking about economics here, you know, it's interesting when the Wall Street Journal has a headline, and they did today because the report came out today. U.S. trade deficit unexpectedly falls to the lowest level since 2009. The October deficit was $29.4 billion, an imbalance nearly 40% smaller than September's. Well, I love how they have to add unexpectedly falls. No, it's not unexpectedly. Matter of fact, half of America voted for that. Yeah, we did. The trade deficit in October hit its smallest since 2009 after Trump's tariff moves. This stunned the people who predict this kind of thing. U.S. trade deficit, 6 fiscal months into President Donald Trump's tariffs, tumbled to its lowest level since mid 2009, the Commerce Department reported Thursday. The total was the lowest since the second quarter of 2009, and the U.S. was just coming out of a financial crisis of the Great Recession of 2008. The U.S. trade deficit 6 months into the fiscal year of President Donald Trump's tariffs tumbled to the lowest level. Again, with exports rising and imports falling, the trade shortfall was just $29.4 billion for October, down 39%. From just last month. Exports increased 2.6%, while imports slipped 3.2%. So let me get this straight. The trade deficit is down 39%. We've increased exports by 2.6%, which means our goods are leaving the country at a higher rate, while imports, we're taking less in, slipped 3.2%. That's a great thing for the economy. It's a great thing for America, and it's basically everything that they said and planned to happen. Not at this rate, though. Even they didn't expect this kind of rate. They actually expected the trade deficit to increase 3%, but yet it decreased, which is a phenomenal thing. And again, it's interesting when you have, and again, the CNBC, I wanted to play it, but it was too long of a clip, and I really couldn't clip it for you. The CNBC host that does their business channel on economics was dumbfounded. He was so giddy and so he was just astounded by the numbers, and he literally on air asked, "Is this right?" when it was given to him. But when you have the Wall Street Journal posting stuff like this, is their headline: "The U.S. trade deficit unexpectedly falls to the lowest level since 2009." Unexpectedly, no, this is what we voted for. This is why people wanted to go in a different direction. They wanted to put America first. They wanted to focus on American jobs. They wanted to stop being taken advantage of by foreign countries. Yes, does that cause a little discomfort? Yeah, it prevents you from getting a little more junk in your Amazon cart, maybe some more expensive American-made things on your Walmart shelves. But it's great news, and we're heading in the right direction. And listen, the financial reports that have been coming out and coming out and coming out and against every prediction that they've had. And it's like, well, you know, let's find something bad about this. Oh, well, let's find something bad about that. No, they're phenomenal. Not the best they could be, but they're headed in the right direction. Phenomenal is probably a bad word. They're headed in the right direction. They're headed in so much the right direction that's even surprising the people who predicted it would head in the right direction. But for the naysayers who said, yeah, this is going to... Remember tariffs? This is going to be the end of us? The world is falling? We're cracking apart at the seams. This is what they were telling us just a few months ago. The tariffs are, they're going to bankrupt everybody. No, every metric is moving in the right directions. Have a little faith. And I'm confident that come tax season, which is going to start very soon now, people are going to start seeing a difference. They're going to start seeing a real difference and go, hey, maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe I'm on board with this. It's time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 3:53, 47 degrees on this Thursday, January 8th, 2026. 47 degrees. It's just a beautiful day outside, isn't it? I didn't even wear a jacket today. I'm wearing a t-shirt and jeans. That's how I do in this weather. So we'll see. Jake, I think we have. So the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette owners announced yesterday that the paper will be shutting down in a few months, citing fiscal loss. Block Communications, Inc. announced it will cease publication on May 3rd. The paper is printed on Thursdays and Sundays and says its website, the average paid circulation is 83,000. A couple of dozen union members returned to work at the Post-Gazette in November after a three-year strike. More than 5 years ago, the newspaper declared it had reached a bargaining impasse with the Newspaper Guild of Pittsburgh and unilaterally imposed terms and conditions of employment on those workers. The paper was later found to have bargained in bad faith by making offers that were not intended to help reach a deal, but by declaring an impasse prematurely. Now, the announcement that Block was shutting down came the same day as the U.S. Supreme Court declined the PG Publishing Company, Inc. emergency appeal to halt the National Labor and Relations Board order to forced to abide by health care coverage policies in the expired union contract. Now, the union contract and everything else aside, this paper traces its roots back to 1786, when the Pittsburgh Gazette began a four-page weekly that became the leading advocate for abolition of slavery in the 19th century. It went through a series of mastheads and owners before 1927, when the Paul Block obtained the paper and named it the Post-Gazette. The Block family said in a statement that it was proud of the service that the Post-Gazette had provided to Pittsburgh in the nearly a century. Phone message seeking comment was left Wednesday for Block Communications headquarters in Toledo, Ohio. Well, there's a mistake, number one. First of all, why is the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's parent company in Toledo, Ohio? That seems to be a problem that a lot of newspapers have, including here in our backyard. Let's have local journalists and local papers have local owners who care about local concerns and local people. That's just good journalism. It's what produces the best journalism. And you can see that when these things start to change hands, they go down a road where readership, viewership, subscribers lose interest because it's not meeting their expectation. Listen, people like the newspaper. I, to this day, like a hard copy that I could flip through and read the newspaper. You know, at the job I had before here, we got it every day. First thing I did when I got it in the morning is I went through it and pretty much read every page, found a lot of things that were relevant to where I was working, you know, highlighted it so other people in the office could key in on it. But it was just one of the things I did. Now, today, I don't get hard copy deliveries. We do here to the station, but I get the digital versions and I flip through it. It's just not the same. I don't like that. For some people, it's more convenient. I guess I'm not of that social media age to where it just comes natural. Is it more convenient? Yeah, I get my iPad and there it is. But, you know, I just like going through the paper. I think it was enjoyable, especially on early mornings or days off or when you have that. But, you know, here's a state icon going back to 1786. I mean, you can't just look at that and say, oh, good riddance. Even if you're, and I don't know the Post-Gazette's, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's, you know, how they write, what their policies are, how they lean. I don't know any of that, nor do I care. Listen, you have an icon of Pittsburgh. I've seen a lot of people in national media, the governor,
say that this is a sad day, and it is. You have something that's lasted for over 100 years. I don't care what field you're in. When you say goodbye to Pennsylvania, when you say goodbye to the work you've done and the footprint that you've put, it is sad. It's a sad day. Now, the owners have been there since 1927 when Paul Block obtained the paper. Even from 1927 on, you have to look at the work they've done in forming the people of Western Pennsylvania. It was their go-to newspaper of the time. You know, what's next? Because I'm telling you right now, with the advent of social media, with the advent of the internet, a lot of it can't be trusted. I mean, the amount of time it takes me to research stories to see just if they're true, because you have such good people mimicking other websites. They are making up phony news sites to put out headlines to where you'll read it and you'll say, oh, this came from CBS Houston, Channel 16. Well, there's no Channel 16 CBS Houston. They made it up. But people see that. They see an icon. They recognize CBS, a major network like in Houston, a major market like Houston, and they start sharing that headline. And it's utter nonsense. It's just not true. And I've caught this. I catch it at least once a day that this stuff's out there. And then with the advent of AI and everything else, it's just it's scary. And people believe it because most of America reads just the headline and maybe the first two sentences. We're going to go to break in just a minute, but we do have State Representative Brenda Pugh in the studio. She is here talking about protecting our daughters and our children and everything else. The microphone's not close enough to you, but don't worry about that. But she's here for you, so hang around. After the 4 o'clock hour, we will come in and talk about what she's been working on in Harrisburg, what she's working on here. And it's focused around protecting our daughters, protecting our girls, protecting a lot of things that matter. As a parent of two daughters, it's something that means a lot to me as a parent herself and grandparent of daughters. It means a lot to her. So stay tuned. We'll be back.
Hey, friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects. And if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.